We're doing the Ein Yaakov, we're up to Daf Nun Hei, and we had learned the Mishnah in which it was recounted how the Rabbi Nechunya ben Hakana used to pray upon his entrance to the academy and upon his exit. And they asked him, what are you praying about? And he said, when I enter, I pray that I shouldn't cause an error, and when I leave, I give thanks for my portion that I've merited to come here and learn Torah. Something to think about. Prayer trains us to be healthy individuals. A person has appreciation. He knows to say thank you. He knows how to anticipate and ask for what he needs. Those are two basic human needs. Two basic human needs that are very confused these days. When he entered, he prayed that he shouldn't cause an error. He shouldn't misquote things, misunderstand things. He's a rabbi. People are going to rely on him. And when he leaves, he gives thanks for his lot. So now we begin the Gemara. And if you recall, we said that when the Gemara or the Mishnah teaches us something, so firstly, we don't rule halacha based upon our learning. We're not yet learning on a level that we can apply it practically. What we learn in Mishnah and Gemara, we can't apply halachically. But we also discussed that when the Mishnah or the Talmud tells us that an individual rabbi did something, so what we know from that is that the individual did it. The other rabbis didn't do it. And the simple understanding would be that halachically we do not do like him, because he was the individual. Doesn't seem like anyone else did it. Only over here, the Talmud tells us, Tanu Rabbanan, we have a Tanoic quote, we have a Braisa. If you recall, 2 weeks ago we described the Tanoic quotes, that we have the Mishnah, and then we have the things that are external to the Mishnah. They're called Braisa. Bra in Aramaic is external. So Tanu Rabbanan is like Shanu Rabbanan. Shanu Rabbanan is like Mishnah. The rabbis learned in Mishnah form, but really this wasn't the Mishnah. And Tanu Rabbanan is the introductory words that are used to quote a Braisa, something external to the Mishnah, that was validated. We had two academies, Rav Chi and Rav Oshaya, that took the time to sit down and verify which Tanai quotes were valid and which were questionable. The ones that they accepted or introduced in the Talmud is Tanu Rabbanan, the rabbis quoted. And last week we ended off with a discussion of who was Rabbi Chiya. You recall? Rabbi Chiya, Rabbi's disciple. Did we discuss the children that Rabbi Chiya educated? No? G'dolim Ma'aseh Chiya. Okay, so who was Rabbi Chiya? So the Talmud tells us that Rabbi Yehuda Anasi, who compiled the Mishnah, there was a question, who should be the Nasi? And they thought maybe Rabbi Chiya would be the leader of the Jewish people, but G'dolim Ma'aseh Chiya. What Rabbi Chiya did was so awesome that they didn't want to stop him from what he was doing. What were the awesome things Rabbi Chiya did? Rabbi Chiya was a walking, talking Machon Meir, one-man show. How did he do that? So the Talmud tells us he'd go to the field and he'd plant and he'd grow flax, and from the flax he'd spin traps, and he'd spin rope, and with the rope he'd make traps, and with the traps he'd catch deer, and then he'd slaughter the deer and feed their meat to the orphans and use their hides to make parchment on which he would write the Torah. And he'd write Torah scrolls, and he'd go from city to city to the little children that didn't know anything about the Torah, and he'd take five little children and he'd teach each one a book of the five books of the Torah, make them literate, teach them a book of the Torah, and then he'd say, now teach one another. You've each mastered one, your five kids, teach one another. And then he'd take kids who were a little bit older, and he'd take six kids and teach each one order of the Shas. We know Shas, Shisha Sidre, the six orders of Mishnah. So he'd take one child and teach each child one order of Mishnah, and then he'd say, now you're six, teach one another. And then they'd say, we want to learn more. And he'd say, fine, for that there are academies. I have to move on to the next town to teach more Jewish children. And that's how he went from town to town teaching Torah. And Rabbi Chiya changed the face of Judaism. That's why I say it was a walking, talking Machon Meir, one-man show. He went to places where the kids didn't know what Torah was. There was no Jewish education. And he changed the face of Israel. It says, thanks to him, the Torah wasn't forgotten. And his job was so important that it says they didn't want to take him to be the leader of the Jewish people. Imagine, he could be King David, he could be the Nasi, the leader of the Jewish people, or he could be the kindergarten teacher, the one who's teaching them how to read Chumash and Mishnah. And they said he's doing a more important job down there than he'd be doing up on top, so we're leaving him there. And from here, we understand that even the education on the simple levels, on the level of Chumash and Mishnah, if it's done by a giant, someone like Rabbi Chiya, well then it's on a different level, and then you produce a different product when you're dealing with someone like Rabbi Chiya teaching the kids. Yeah. S Yud Yud Aleph, Rabbi Chiya. So Yud Yud Aleph. So that's why Rabbi said about Rabbi Chiya, Gidolim Maaseh Chiya, how great are the actions of Chiya. So Rabbi Chiya had his academy, Rabbi Elshaya had his academy, and together they went through the Tanaic quotes, and they gave validity to certain Tanaic quotes. They said, these have been verified, and the ones that they verified are quoted in the Gemara as Tanu Rabbanan, the rabbis taught. Tanu, like Shanu. In Hebrew and Aramaic, the Taf and the Shin are interchangeable. Very often, if you want to figure out an Aramaic word, so just try to switch the Taf with the Shin. So the rabbis taught the following. Bichnisato, when he enters the academy, when he enters to learn, notice where are we entering? The Beis Medrash. Where are we leaving? The Beis Medrash. Sometimes the Shas says, Bo ulmat, come and learn. That's an indication that this is something that needs to be learned inside the Beis Medrash, inside the academy. Sometimes the Shas will say, Tzei ulmat, go out and learn. That's something that for some reason needs to be learned outside. What's the difference? When we get there, we'll break our heads over it. So, yeah. Where it says Gemara. Five lines from the top. Tanu Rabbanan. So, the Braisa says, Bichnisato, when he enters the Beis Medrash, Mahu Omer, what does he say? Yiratzon milfanecha, may it be the will before you. Hashem Elokai, Hashem my God, shelo yerad devar takala al yadi, that no error should be caused by me. What does al yadi mean? Through my hands. What does the word yad mean? Hand. The word yad could mean hand. What else can the word yad mean? Yad could mean a set place. Yad could mean next to. Yad could mean a king. Why is yad a king? Because the king is, so to speak, God's hand in the world. He's the one that's representing authority. So when we say mevi'a liyidei, what do we mean? Liyidei to the hands of. Sometimes yad means the extension, not the thing itself, but the extension of. Not directly, like what we'd call, you know, when it comes to a crime. So there's first degree, second degree, third degree. There are things I do directly, there are things that are done as an extension. So when we say liyidei or aliyidei, it means as a cause, like second degree. Yeah? You guys with me? Okay. So, shelo yerad dvar takala al yadi. Al yadi, simply understood, means through me, through my hand. But really, it just means even in the second degree. Yad is an indication of second degree. You guys with me? Clear? Does the page say nun hey on the top?
Yeah.
Okay, you see on the right side it says Gemara, the second white line. Yeah, see, it says Gemara, go down one line, and that's where we are. Takala liyadi. No, I shouldn't cause an error, even in the second degree. Velo ekashel, and I shouldn't stumble, bidvar halacha, in words of halacha. People will ask me, what's the halacha? Can I eat chicken with milk? I'll tell them, gee, I think it's okay. Wrong. It's prohibited. Hey, guys, before you laugh, wait. Rav Yossi of Galilee held it was permissible. There's a machlokes. Even we hold it's prohibited rabbinically. That's why, technically, if you wanted to have almond milk with almond milk is not milk. So let's say you want to sip some almond milk while you eat your steak. Your friends are going to come in and say, hey, what you doing? Don't you know? Meat and milk, you can't do that. You'll say, no, it's almond milk. They'll say, yeah, but everyone in the Beis Medrash is looking up at you at that balcony, seeing you with your milk and meat. What's with you? So we say put a bunch of almonds in the front. That's not enough. It's enough if you're eating something that's prohibited rabbinically, like chicken. If you're going to eat chicken with almond milk, so then that's okay. You put a little bit of almonds there and everyone could see that what you're drinking is almond milk. So he would pray, I shouldn't stumble in words of halacha. What? Soy cheese or soy burger? What? Soy cheese with a real burger? So that could be a problem, right? That could be a problem. Right? So we say things that are prohibited because of maris ayin, because they look bad. So those things we say, even bechadrei chadarim, even in a private room, one should refrain from doing. But in that, it depends which things. Some things, yeah, and some things, no. Meaning, for that you have to learn more to know when to apply that. There are rules about that. When do we say bechadrei chadarim? We can't go into the rule. It's too long. No, that we can't do Thursday night either, because it's too lengthy, too many details. Yeah. So they're selling soy cheeseburger in restaurants. That's what they do, yeah? They give soy cheese with the burger? I don't know enough about it. Meaning, if it's easily recognizable that it's soy cheese, then maybe that would be okay. Right, I mean, like, I know today everyone knows that those, what they call Moshe Bateva, that they have those hot dogs wrapped in dough. So those, usually it's a given they're soy. They also make them with real hot dogs. But in Israel it's pretty well known that usually when you eat that, that's soy. So there it wouldn't be as much of a problem. People know that when you eat ice cream today, they have parve ice cream. Once upon a time, they didn't have that. You couldn't serve a meat meal at a wedding and then serve parve ice cream because everyone fell. And by the way, you have to check. I was at a wedding where they messed up. Okay, so you have to check. You guys don't have to check. There's a hechsher on the plate. But when you make a simcha, when it's your affair, you might want to just double check on these things. Like they didn't mess up on the ice cream, they messed up on the coffee whitener that they put out with the coffee. They put real milk when they were serving meat outside. That was a problem. But it depends. If it's not recognizable, I guess it could be a problem. I don't know enough about it. I don't know about what the soy cheese looks like and how recognizable it is. So, back to our Gemara. So he said, though it may be the will of you, Hashem, I shouldn't be the cause of an error. I shouldn't stumble in words of halacha. V'yismechu bi chaverai. And my friends should be happy with me. It's not enough that what I say is right. Sometimes we could say what's right, and people get upset at us, right? There's a Gemara that, who was it? The Gemara records one of the Amoraim was once learning with a companion, and his companion kept asking him questions. He asked the question, he tried to give him an answer, he proved them wrong. Tried to give a second answer, proved them wrong. Tried to give him a third answer, proved them wrong. Now he was the student in front of the rabbi. The student kept proving the rabbi wrong. He felt pretty happy. Thank God, I'm getting it right. Meaning he was outsmarting his rabbi, so he smiled. His rabbi looked up and thought he was laughing at him. So he felt bad. So in heaven, they said, ooh, you made your rabbi feel bad? He became a mute. He couldn't talk anymore. So the Talmud says, eventually the rabbi prayed for his healing and he became better. But sometimes just because you're getting it right, it doesn't mean everyone's going to be happy with you. You could get it right and people will be upset at you. So he would pray, I should get it right. My friends should be happy with me. I shouldn't say about something that's impure that it's pure. Nor should I say about something that's pure, tamei, that it's impure. People sometimes think, if I'm too stringent, that's not so bad. No, get it right. Don't say about what's right that it's wrong. Don't say about what's wrong that it's right. And then it continues prayer and say, my friends too should not err when they say halacha. V'esmach bahim, and let me be happy with them. So this prayer, the Braisa introduces it as b'chnisato mahu omer. When one enters, when he enters, what should he say? So from here we derive that every one of us should say this prayer. So we're just the Mishnah, so the Mishnah records one rabbi who said it. Being that the Gemara quotes it as, what does he say? That indicates that every one of us should say it. And if you look in the beginning of the Gemaros, and it has the quote. So that makes your life easier. And when you finish learning, it has the prayer for when you finish learning. And some of them do you a really big favor. They add all kinds of verses that the Kabbalists say you should add. I wouldn't worry about that. Keep it short and get to your learning. That's more important. When you master Hebrew and it takes you all the second to say those verses, then you could say it. So long as it's taking you 2 minutes to say it, so leave it for a different time. And when he'd leave the academy, when he'd leave the Beis Medrash, what would he say? I thank before you, Hashem my God, that you made my lot among those who sit in the Beit Midrash, and you did not make my lot from those that sit in the Kranot. What is Kranot? The markets. Those who are busy just talking, those who are in the shuk, you know, everyone sits and does something during their day. Thank you, Hashem, that my lot was here in the Beit Midrash. Shehem mashkimim v'ani mashkim. They wake up early, and I wake up early. Right? Guys, supposed to wake up early, yeah? Hem mashkimim nidvrim beterim. They wake up early for things. What do they have at the end of the day? They made another $10. And I wake up early for the words of Torah. I'm waking up early for the most precious thing in the world. I want to tell you that. You know, people sometimes say, why is it so hard to learn Torah? I know about myself. Whenever I studied secular studies, did business, whatever I did, I could go on 4 hours of sleep. Comes to learning Torah, suddenly I need another 50% sleep at least. Why? I don't think it's the Yetzirah. I think that we're dealing with the most precious thing on the universe. So if you wanted to make a mint in any other field, you'd have to invest a lot of work. You want to make a mint in Torah, you want to acquire Torah, you got to put your all into it. You're dealing with the most precious thing. We're fools because the Torah is given for free. The Torah is the one thing where God says, you don't have to be the son of a rabbi, you don't have to be a kohen. You want to learn it here. Whoever wants it can have it. Free. Yet, on the other hand, because it's free, we think, whenever I want, I could have it. Like someone told me, what do you mean? I could come to a shir, I didn't make this week's shir. I'll hear it online, I'll come next week. So it's misleading. People lose precious time. And the Torah isn't always going to wait for us. Like we quoted in the beginning, the Jerusalem Talmud says, the Torah says to us, Im tazveni yom, if you stop your learning, you leave me for a day, you go on a trip, you don't even bother looking at your learning, you're in a different world for a day, your mind is back, I leave you for 2 days. Now when you want to come back, you'll have to work twice as hard to get back into things. That's why I try to make a deal with my chavrusas, that we talk on the phone for 5 minutes on Friday, and I'm going to say Shabbos. I always tell them, 5 minutes, our mind is still in that Gemara. We shouldn't have a pause of 2 days, a whole long weekend where we haven't seen it. We walk in Sunday, it's like first day of Machon Meir. Oh, what tractate are we learning? What thing? You know, that's the way I am. If I don't look at things, during the weekend, I come in Sunday, it's like the first day of the year. You guys might have better memories, but it's still a good idea to take the time to stay in touch. Yeah. So that's another rule that says, God says, if you do your best to learn Torah, then God, so to speak, helps you that the things that would get in your way don't get in your way. If you stop your learning for every foolish thing that comes your way, maybe I'll go check out what's new in the coffee room. Maybe I'll go see if I have a new SMS or no email. If a person indicates to God that he's willing to take the breaks, so God will give him a lot of reasons to take breaks. Yeah?
Is this related to learning?
What does that have to do with this?
And that's just what you're saying, how it's harder to learn Torah than like secular subjects, and we need more focus. And so is that like, were we taught it for that reason, like a relearning? Like,
maybe. Maybe.
Going back to it is easier.
So that concept it says, that we were taught all of the Torah in the womb to make it easier on us. But I'm not sure if the reason it had to be easier was because of this. That I don't know. That concept it does say. So again, he'd say, thank God, thank you Hashem, for making my portion here in the Beit Midrash and not those out there in the marketplace. Shehem mashkimim, because they wake up early, v'ani mashkim, and I wake up early. Hem mashkidim mim nidvarim betelim. They wake up early for things that ultimately they lose their value. It loses its value in the world. Ani mashkim, and I wake up early lidivrei Torah, for the precious words of Torah. Ani amel vehem amelim. I work hard, they work hard. Ani amel umkabel sachar. I work hard, and I will ultimately get wages for it. Vehem amelim, and they work, veinam mekablim sachar, and they're not going to get any wages in the world to come for their hard work over here. Ani ratz vehem ratzim. I run and they run. Ani ratz v'chaya olam haba. I'm running to the world to come because I'm setting up my world to come. Vehem ratzim libe'er shachat, and they're just running to the grave at the end of the day. One day leads to the other. When it's all over, where are they going to go? So he gives thanks that he was in the portion of those who invest in the future world, who invest in something that's going to last with a person, as opposed to someone whose whole day is spent only working in the marketplace, whatever it is. At the end of the day, what does he have to show for it? Someone once said, from the minute we're born, we're dying. It's true. It's only depressing depending on what I've done with my day and with my life. Okay, Tanu Rabbanan. We have another. What's Tanu Rabbanan? Who knows? Which rabbis? Braisa, that was validated by Rav Chiya or Rav Oshaya. One of those two Batei Midrash. Rav Chiya or Rav Oshaya. One of those two Batei Midrash validated this Braisa. Kshechala Rabbi Eliezer. When Rabbi Eliezer became ill. Nichnesu talmidav levakro. His students came in to check up if he needed something. What does Bikur hold him?
Oh, when you pray for someone to feel better.
That's partially correct. What does Bikur hold him? You visit the sick. That's what people usually say, like you said initially. The word Bikur in Hebrew is not what people think. Levaker in modern Hebrew means to visit. But in real Hebrew, levaker means to check what's with the person. Levaker, why is boker called boker? Boker is when you can discern, you have light. So that's why it's called boker. The morning, boker doesn't mean morning. Boker means the time when you can discern. Levaker means to visit someone and discern what they need. So bikur cholim means checking out what the ill need. Now, it also says in Shulchan Aruch that if you visit someone ill, what do they need? They need prayer. They need to get better. If you visited and you haven't prayed for them to get better, you haven't fulfilled the mitzvah of Bikur Cholim. We have a mitzvah to check out what someone who's ill needs. And guys, I'm going to say this. I say this a few times a semester. We have people here in the gear process. They're going to have circumcisions. When an adult has circumcision, he's recovering in bed. It's our job to check out what they need and go get it for them. Every year I visit the guys after circumcision and I get them the medication they need and the bandages they need. And every year I marvel at the fact that all of you have a mitzvah sitting at your doorstep and I come from the other edge of town to do that mitzvah. I'm happy I merit to do it, but where is everyone else? So it's your mitzvah. You guys have a mitzvah. If your roommate's ill and you need someone to bring him the meal, whatever he needs, so that's Bikur Cholim. Bikur Cholim isn't just, hi, how are you? Bikur Cholim is what do you need? You need someone to do your laundry. That's Bikur Cholim. Yeah.
Quick little side comment. I have a friend who was driving his car and he was on drugs or something and he smashed his car, flew out of the windshield of the window, fell on the floor, a cab drove over him, okay, punctured his lung and broke his bones. And like basically, it was during exam period for me too, like a very intense exam. I had an exam the next day and the next day and the next day. It was very intense, right?
Ooh.
And when people started calling me like, hey, you know, this person in the hospital, I'm going to go visit. And I thought about it, I'm like, I think if everyone's going to go visit, that's nice, but that's not going to save him. I'm like, God's going to save him. I'm like, I'd rather pray. And people are like, you're nuts, what are you talking about? I'm like, well, you're secular and amazing. And like, so I went to pray. That was the better thing to do. I had one option. Like, I wasn't going to go every 10 minutes to visit him. I just decided to pray with the minions with all these people who went for that reason to pray for him. I thought that was the better choice.
Bikur Cholim, like we just said, is what does he need? If he's in the hospital, so sometimes in the hospital someone needs people to look after them to make sure they don't mess up the medication. But if it's just a question of coming by and saying, oh, I feel so bad, he looks like a wreck.
Packed house, everything's a popular person.
Yeah. So I'm saying, so then what's left to do is, like you said, to pray, yeah? So when Rabbi Lezer was ill, his students came in Livakro. They came to see what he needed. Amru lo, they said, Rebbe lamdenu orchot chayim v'nizkeh b'hem l'chaye olam haba. They asked him, teach us the path of life. What's the direction we should go so that we will get life in the world to come? He's on his deathbed, and they say, teach us the way of life. You're about to go. So what's he going to tell them? Amar lehem, he said to them, Hizaharu bichvod chavrechem. Be careful with the honor of your friends. Point number one. Your friends, the guy that's learning with you in Beis Medrash, be careful with his honor. Uchshatem itpalelim. And when you stand in prayer, de'u lifnei mi atem umdim. You should know, take heed, take notice before whom you're standing. Person standing in prayer, and he's saying, "Aleinu l'shabeach la'adon hakol." We should all give praise to the one who is master of everything. And master of everything. He's dealing with the world. Master of everything. Yeah. Yeah. So our tradition is usually we read the square brackets and not the round ones. They stem from different editions of the Talmud, and usually we assume that the square brackets are more reliable as far as the text. The whole chapter of Aleinu, that whole section, what are we saying? How great God is and how much honor we should give before Him. When Yeshua entered the land of Israel and saw all the nations, pagans, serving all the other gods, and he said, wow, you know, we've been living in this bubble. We have clouds all around us. We forgot what the outside world is like. He entered the land of Israel and saw all the pagan ways, people burning their kids, people doing all kinds of silly things for their pagan gods. Said he then bowed down and composed Aleinu L'Shabeach. We're reading Aleinu and we're saying how great God is and how beautiful is His Torah. And what does the average person do while he's doing Aleinu? Wrapping up his tefillin, checking out that his hair looks okay in the mirror, doing a million other things. As he's saying, God, so magnificent, He gave us the Torah. We're not like everyone else. We're monotheists. They do things that are silly. We do things that are worthwhile. We say the most meaningful prayer. I mean, Aleinu Shabbat is one of the most, if you take a few minutes to read it, what are we saying in Aleinu Shabbat? And yet, that falls by the wayside. So, he warned them. He said,
Joshua.
Today, Be'ezrat Hashem, we'll learn more details, and I'll modify what I just said. But that's in the next class. For now, we'll leave it at that. So, I'm sorry, Avram, I feel like I'm tantalizing you. I see the look in your eyes. We'll get there. I can't do everything on one foot. So he told them, number one, be careful with the honor of your friends. Number two, when you pray, take note of who you're standing before in your prayer. Uminu b'neichem min ha-higayon. Prevent your kids from spending too much time just reviewing the verses of the Tanakh, of the Bible. Because a person has to spend some time learning the oral law. And if they're going to spend all their time just reviewing the written law, they're not going to get anywhere like that. As we discussed in the introduction to Tanakh, people made the biggest mistakes in world history and in Jewish history just reading the Tanakh. So he told them, your kids are going to get attracted. They'll start reading the Tanakh and they'll see the beautiful stories of Tanakh and how much depth there is in Tanakh. True. But they're going to have a tendency to spend too much time. So your job as a parent is to keep them away from the Tanakh a little bit. Tell them, wait, let's learn a little bit of Mishnah. Let's learn what the oral tradition says about this. Prevent them from spending too much time just reading the Tanakh because that's going to lead them astray ultimately. You can't just read the written law without the oral law. We got both together. So when you see your kids and they're investing too much time just reviewing the written law, remind them they got to spend time in the oral law too. Vehoshivum ben birkei talmidei chachamim, and make sure your children grow up between the feet of rabbis, of talmidei chachamim, of people who are learning. And that this is one of the big ways of doing good chinuch. We could give our kids what we could give, but we could give them even more if we make sure that they're around people who are talmidei chachamim. Whenever rabbis would come visiting from Israel, so my parents would ensure that these rabbis would stay by us, because people who come from Israel, you know, they don't have a place to stay necessarily. So my parents would always try to verify who's the next big rabbi coming from Israel, and they'd call them and say, no, if you come to our neck of the woods, you're welcome to stay by us. And if they saw that a rabbi came to town who they hadn't known about in advance, so they'd invite him for a Shabbos meal. Very often the rabbi's staying by a certain family, and he doesn't want to burden them with every Shabbos meal. So they tell him, look, how many weeks are you here for? Why don't you come to us for the Shabbos day meal? And this way they ensured that as we were growing up, we got to see many rabbis as we were growing up, including big rabbis from Israel, because they invited them for a meal. They invited them to sleep by them. Simple things, not too expensive. People have a guest room, or sometimes the kids go and spare their room for the guest. At the end of the day, I remember the Seder I sat with Rabbi Breuer, who composed the most accurate Tanakh we have today, he put together. I remember that Seder that he was by us. Why? Because my parents invited him. And I can tell you other rabbis who we grew up with them because that's what my parents did. That was the advice Rabbi Lezer told his students. He said, make sure your children grow up between the birkei, on the laps of sages. My father always quotes that I was sitting on Rabbi Breuer's lap, and I was a little kid. And he said a Dvar Torah at the Seder, and I went over to my father's lap, and I said, I don't understand the logic in what he's saying, A, B, C, and D. And my father said, go tell him. So I went back to his lap, and he said, I saw you whispering to your father, what do you have to say? I said, with all due respect, I don't understand the logic in what the rabbi said, because of, and I showed him in Nagada. And he was flustered. He didn't have an answer. Like, okay. You know, maybe he didn't have an answer to a seven-year-old. I don't know. I mean, I don't even remember what it was about. But at the end of the day, you grow up on the laps of Talmidei Chachamim. You learn from it. You gain from it. It's Hoshibum ben Birkei Talmidei Chachamim. Place them between the laps of Talmidei Chachamim. Ubishvir kach tizkul che'olam haba. And with this, you will merit the world to come. Now, analyze what did he tell them. You guys should have a question. But look at the advice he gave them. Let's read it over. Be careful with your friend's honor. When you pray, remember who you're praying before. Prevent your children from spending too much time just reading the written law, the Torah Shebichtav, and have your children grow up between the laps of Talmidei Chachamim. What about their doing acts of kindness? What about their learning Torah? He didn't say that. We would think, he'd tell them, take advantage of every minute, make sure you learn Friday afternoon when no one else is learning, Shabbos afternoon when you're falling asleep. So I think that those things they knew. Those things they didn't need him to tell them. If they're coming to him when he's about to pass away, he took the points where people might mess up. What are the points where people might mess up? If I'm learning Torah, and my friend comes to sit next to me, so maybe I'll show myself the extra pious. I won't tell him good morning, because I'm learning, right? God forbid I'll take a moment and say good morning. I'm floored. If people have a chavrusa, and I ask them how chavrusa is doing, and he doesn't know. What do you mean you don't know? You guys just learning partners? You don't ask them, how are you? How is Shabbos? How's your family? So I believe when you're learning, don't talk about anything else. But I believe before you're learning, you have to express an interest in your partner. When I learn, if my chavrusa wants to talk to me about other things, I say, let's close the Gemara, we'll go outside and talk. I can't learn and talk at the same time. You want to learn with me, we'll learn. You want to talk, we'll talk. But before we learn, I do want to talk. I want to hear how your Shabbos is. I want to hear who you are. I have an interest in you as a human being. Before we open the Gemara, I think he was reminding them, be careful with their honor. Because sometimes when a person's extra zealous, he's trying to learn and perform mitzvot, What falls by the wayside is his partner's honor. And another thing that falls by the wayside is the way a person prays. He knows the halachos, I could skip this, I could skip that. You know, at this point I could leave shul, at this point I could come into shul. The more you learn, the more you know the loopholes to get out of praying, right? So he reminded them, wait a second, who are you praying before? Yeah, you could tell me technically, it says in Mishnah Brura, that after Uhol Etzion you could already wrap up your tefillin. Great. But what's the idea? Who are you talking to when you pray? And the third point he's saying is, your kids are going to sit there reading the Tanakh again and again. You might get all excited. Great, he's learning. Stop. Remember, that's not enough. Maybe it's not good for him to spend so much time just reviewing the Tanakh. Maybe your job as a parent is to say, wait, let's do something else. Let's learn together a little bit of the oral tradition that's behind all this. Don't be so thrilled. Sometimes a parent sees his kid, he's breaking his head, learning again and again and again the same Tanakh, and he's happy. Wait, maybe that's not what he needs now. And the last point is, it's not enough that you, the father, know. So you know. Have him grow up with other people too. Let him see other Talmidei Chachamim. So I thought that maybe that's why he had to say those points. Is Arvit at half past or 35 past? Half past. So let's go.